Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It is Thursday, October 25th. The War on Terror, the Kill or Kill program, projected to continue for another 10 years.
Remember that song called Kill Me from Big Tim's Last Hip Hee? Too much of a risk for a golden disc. The price he paid for money.
Darkly prophetic music from Golden Earring all the way back to about 1978. And in today's news and comment, I will offer rare praise for two news organizations that all too often reflect the Beltway consensus and challenge none of the important issues of our day, starting with the Washington Post, a once proud independent voice that has typically towed the line, first under Bush and Cheney, and now under President Obama, for anything advanced by our national security state. And to its credit, bylined by reporter Greg Miller, whose work I'm not familiar with, I've never seen his name before, the Post published on October 23rd a lengthy story about the programs that have been expanded and solidified by President Obama and his National Security Advisor, John Brennan, formerly of the CIA. And we learned some important new things about the use of drones, the targeting of individuals, including some American citizens, and the extension of presidential authority by Barack Obama to enable him and his successors to kill at will, without oversight, without due process, without the constitutional protections, even, as I underscore, for American citizens. And it has a chilling name, reminiscent of a film a few years ago called The Matrix. They call it the Disposition Matrix. It's a new blueprint, they say, for pursuing terrorists, a next-generation targeting list, again called the Disposition Matrix. The Matrix, according to the Post, contains the names of terrorism suspects arrayed against an accounting of the resources being marshaled to track them down, including sealed indictments and clandestine operations. American officials said the database is designed to go beyond existing kill lists, mapping plans for the disposition of suspects even beyond the reach of American drones. And I'll quote again, the United States' conventional wars are winding down, but the government expects to continue adding names to the kill or capture lists for years. And when we look for a legal construct, a constitutional or other basis for these actions, I can find none, except the unopposed expansion of presidential power. Among senior Obama administration officials, it says there's a broad consensus that such operations are likely to be extended at least another decade. And in direct contradiction of the assertion made by President Obama in the final presidential debate against Mitt Romney, where he said we have decimated al-Qaeda, these administration officials say, given the way al-Qaeda continues to metastasize, some officials say no clear end is in sight. This is perpetual war, not by massive military operations or even fighter jets and B-1 bombers and stealth aircraft. No, these are targeted methods using drones, using spooks, and solidifying the transition of the Central Intelligence Agency from its original mission to gather information to a secretive military and paramilitary organization. Here's a quote from an unnamed senior administration official. We can't possibly kill everyone who wants to harm us. It's a necessary part of what we do. We're not going to wind up in 10 years in a world of everybody holding hands and saying, we love America. Just listen to that. The arrogance of it. When, as Pepe Escobar has pointed out, in our most recent in-depth interview at peterbcollins.com, and I highly recommend that you listen, we don't acknowledge the blowback that comes from these actions. And that with every drone strike, particularly those that kill civilians, women, children, any kind of non-militants, we create a new generation, an expanded groups of people who hate the United States and will take up asymmetrical warfare against us. And this is so fundamentally wrong, and in my opinion, fundamentally un-American. So we learn more from this expose in the Post. I'll throw up a link to it, and I encourage you to read the entire piece. But some highlights to pass along here. The timeline suggests that the U.S. has reached only the midpoint of what was once known as GWAT, the Global War on Terror, targeting lists that were regarded as finite emergency measures after 9/11 are now fixtures of the national security apparatus. The rosters expand and contract with the pace of drone strikes, but never go to zero. So this is infinite. It is endless. It is perpetual. And there are moments of truthiness where the Post tries to offer a kind of honesty and reality check, and it goes so far. They note, the number of militants and civilians killed in the drone strikes over the last 10 years will soon exceed 3,000, surpassing the number of people alleged to have been killed by the September 11th attacks attributed to Al-Qaeda. The Obama administration touts its successes in the marketing for the re-election campaign, and according to the Post here, it's taken tentative steps toward greater transparency by formally acknowledging for the first time our use of armed drones, as if we were all in the dark about that. And it compares that limited hangout, to use a Richard Nixon term, to less visible, it says, is the extent to which Obama has institutionalized the highly classified practice of targeted killing, transforming ad hoc elements into a counterterrorism infrastructure capable of sustaining a seemingly permanent war. Privately, officials acknowledge that the development of this matrix is part of a series of moves to embed counterterrorism tools into U.S. policy for the long haul. Over at the CIA, a former military leader in the Middle East, David Petraeus, is pushing for an expansion of his agency's fleet of armed drones. JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, which carried out the raid that killed bin Laden, has moved commando teams into suspected terrorist hotbeds in Africa. We have an outpost in Djibouti. And where is the congressional authorization for this expansion of military action? This is WAR, war. And apparently they feel that the blank check that was written for George W. Bush to go after those who were responsible for 9/11 can be extended to almost anyone determined to be a terrorist threat. And they mention people like me. Critics contend that these justifications, have become more tenuous as the drone campaign has expanded far beyond the core of the Al-Qaeda operatives alleged to be behind the strikes on New York and Washington. Critics note the administration still doesn't confirm the CIA's involvement or the identities of those who were killed, and certain strikes are now under legal challenge, including the killings last year in Yemen of U.S.-born Al-Qaeda operative, I have to say alleged, Anwar al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son. This matrix and the other moves result in a single, continually evolving database in which biographies, locations, known associates, and affiliated organizations are all cataloged. And we know about the Tuesday morning video conference where they decide who's going to be killed this week. And they call it the Killer Capture Program. And the Post in this article confirms what I've been saying, that there's only one known capture in the last year or two. And that is an alleged Al-Qaeda operative who was found off the coast of Yemen, held for 2 months aboard an American ship before being transferred to the custody of Justice Department and charged in federal court in New York. His last name is Warsame. All the rest? Killed. And that's why I know it offends some people to hear me use the term assassin to describe the President of the United States, a guy I voted for. Check the dictionary. It fits. We're learning more about the unraveling position of the Obama administration, about the details of the attack September 11th this year in Benghazi, Libya. And I will recap for those who haven't heard before. I regard the Republican attacks and the investigation of Darrell Issa, the House Oversight Committee, as pure election year political opportunism. Some of it's been dangerous, like the way Romney attacked Obama before we even knew that the ambassador had been killed. But the Associated Press reports that 2 hours after the consulate came under attack, a State Department email sent to officials and the White House Situation Room in Washington named the Islamist group Ansar al-Sharia, said it had claimed responsible on Facebook and Twitter for the attack. So, the claims that it was spontaneous certainly don't hold up to scrutiny, and I continue to wait for the full story to shake out and for us to learn what the White House has been covering up. I mentioned our in-depth interview with Pepe Escobar, the globe-trotting correspondent for Asia Times. And I recommend the podcast. It's available for subscribers right now. And if you're not a subscriber, hey, it's only a buck for a 24-hour pass. I need your help to support our independent work here. $5 a month for a subscription or $50 a year. And I do need more people to support. We've had some people recently who had to unsubscribe because they can't afford it. And so if you value what we do here and you can afford it, please take out a subscription. And this podcast is intentionally given away free. And I urge you to share it with like-minded individuals and encourage them to support us with a subscription. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Pepe Escobar about the bizarre way that Bob Schieffer brought up drone strikes in the debate, saying, "We already know how President Obama feels. Mitt Romney, how do you feel?" Here's that excerpt.
It's amazing because the way that the question was posed, Obama already got away with a non-answer. So I think this, you know, it's a graphic illustration of mainstream corporate media, how it works in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You simply don't ask a direct question. Tell me about the legality of your shadow war in AFPAC. Tell me about studies made in the U.S., published this year in the U.S., saying that it's a 3-to-1, 4-to-1, sometimes 9-to-1 collateral damage. Mm-hmm. Tell me about blowback in the Pashtun tribal areas in Afghanistan. The fact that this blowback is going to last for a long time because, according to the Pashtun war, if you kill a member of the family, the whole family must exact revenge on you. And you means Americans all over.
And in Yemen, where there is no existing authority for the president to use any military force, and where he crossed the line in targeting and killing Alaki and his innocent 16-year-old son.
Yeah.
And those things don't get mentioned at all. And by framing the question the way he did, Bob Schieffer made sure, because you know that Romney is not going to criticize those acts.
Of course, because it's a presidential sanctioned illegal shadowy war. Mm-hmm. If we have Obama 2.0 or Mitt Romney, it's going to stay and it's going to be amplified. It could involve sooner or later other countries in Northern Africa or Central Africa as well, not to mention Southwest Asia, Iran. Mm-hmm. It could involve in the long run even South America if we have Romney, because Romney wants trade opportunities with Latin America, but he continues to demonize Hugo Chavez in Venezuela as a dictator. The guy won 14 elections, democratic ones, observed by everybody in his neighbor. But Mitt Romney is going to declare war against Venezuela and, by extension, Bolivia, Ecuador, and the other ALBA countries in South America. So expect more drones and expect more blowback.
Again, you can hear the full conversation with Pepe Escobar at peterbcollins.com. And I want to mention once again that the thing that has upset me the most this week is the plea deal by John Kiriakou, the former CIA agent who leaked information about the use of torture, the videotaping of waterboarding. And he is the sole individual who is going to prison for anything related to the illegal, immoral, unconstitutional, and treaty-violating torture program that was established under the Bush administration. And, of course, this hasn't been discussed anywhere in the campaign this year. And speaking of the omissions of this presidential campaign, the other corporate-type news outlet that I want to offer some praise for today is Public Television's NewsHour. Because while I often criticize them for staying painfully inside the Beltway, and the talking heads that they present are neocons and conservatives, and they consider that a full range of views, to their credit, there were two elements of their broadcast on Wednesday evening that deserve praise. They did a whole segment that they said is part of a series about the issues that are not being covered in this year's political campaigns. And one, and I fully agree with them, is the housing crisis in this country, the number of homeowners who are still underwater, the phony claim that we have a bunch of predatory borrowers who buffaloed the banks into giving them the mortgages that were going to be reset, these high-risk mortgages. It's the bank's fault, 98% of the time. Certainly, there are some people who gamed the system, but to blame the borrowers is just an insult. And they brought on some experts who described the status of the situation, and the PBS anchor flatly stated, and correctly, that both candidates are running away from this issue. Also to its credit, the NewsHour broadcast a decent-length segment about the third-party presidential candidate debate that included Rocky Anderson, my candidate from the Justice Party, Jill Stein of the Green Party, the former governor of Utah, Gary Johnson, and a former congressman named Virgil Goode. Larry King was the moderator, and while he's not the most aggressive person, he is a known personality who lent some weight to the proceedings. Have you seen any coverage on MSDNC, on CNN, or on Fox, or on one of the old mainline networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, about these minor party candidates? If you have, email me that information. I can't watch them all, but I'm dubious that any of those outlets have provided that kind of information. Meanwhile, the problems with the integrity of our upcoming election continue to mount and fester. And I want to refer you to my friend Brad Friedman's blog, bradblog.com, because he does the best job. And he's a single guy, an individual, who covers this with extremely limited resources. But he has revealed, as he reported on a recent podcast right here, that there is a voter registration scam in Virginia, one of the key battleground states, and the young man who has been separated from the Republican voter registration effort, at least for purposes of reporting, is pictured in a photo at Bradblog with the Attorney General of the state of Virginia. It's actually a commonwealth, who has said he is not going to prosecute, he's not going to investigate. And Democrats in Virginia are calling for a federal-level investigation from Eric Holder's Justice Department. And I'm not sure we'll see much more out of that. Also at Bradblog, I encourage you to read the exchange of emails between Brad and a man who I've dealt with and have some respect for, Judd Legum, who is now the editor-in-chief of the Center for American Progress website called thinkprogress.org. And they do a good job. They're obviously pro-democratic. But they smeared Brad Friedman earlier this week, claiming that he is a conspiracy theorist for simply reporting that a group with close ties to Mitt Romney and his campaign, including a majority of the board of directors of the company that took over Hart InterCivic, who are all donors or former Bain employees, well, let me rephrase that, the ones who have been singled out are all, not the entire board, fits that description. But a majority of the board either has ties to Bain Capital, or these are rich Republicans who are bundling, collecting money from others for the Romney campaign. And they bought Hart InterCivic, which is a voting machine company that operates in more than a dozen states. And as Brad updates today, Hart InterCivic has contracts to manage the machines, even if they were sold, or maintain the machines, even if they were sold to certain jurisdictions a few years ago. There's also good reporting on this at the Free Press website of Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis. That's at freepress.org. And in fact, Free Press and Fitrakis are the people who are reporting these ongoing maintenance agreements. And it's really sad that Think Progress, and I've seen some independent people, including a Sonoma State University professor, who have challenged the reporting, claiming that it's connecting dots in ways that can't be confirmed. And they're burying their heads in the sand. And at Think Progress, read the exchange back and forth as Brad pleads for a correction and shows copies of his articles that establish that he's not promoting or spinning conspiracy theories. Now, here is a report that I found at Yahoo News, written by Reuters, which is an international news service. And just a quick couple of quotes here. In Florida, Virginia, and Indiana, voters have received phone calls that wrongly told them there was no need to cast a ballot in person on Election Day because they could only vote by phone. Now, that's taking advantage of idiots, but there are a lot of idiots out there. And nobody's allowed to vote by phone. You can vote by mail, you can early vote at a precinct, or you can go on Election Day. In Ohio and Wisconsin, billboards in mostly low-income and minority neighborhoods showed prisoners behind bars and warned of criminal penalties for voter fraud, an effort that voting rights groups say was designed to intimidate minority voters. And across the nation, some employers, notably David and Charles Koch, the billionaire brothers, are urging their workers to vote for Republican Mitt Romney for president. Now, these are just some of the ways. And again, I urge you to go back a couple of podcasts and listen to the recent conversation with Brad Friedman. Because the Republicans are gaming the system once again in an effort to make sure that some people don't vote, that some votes aren't counted, and that they have full control of the tabulation system in critical states. As I pointed out to Pepe Escobar, with the polling now showing a slight trend in favor of Obama, this is still close enough to steal. One of the reasons I've decided that I am safe here in California to cast a protest vote against Barack Obama on November 6th is his failure to prosecute the clear criminal behavior of banks and bankers that led to the meltdown in 2008. And so we have a news story. Feds seek $1 billion alleged fraud by B of A. This is related to Countrywide Financial, which was in a shotgun wedding purchased by Bank of America, and it was Hank Paulson, the last Bush Treasury Secretary, who was holding the shotgun. Nonetheless, they are seeking damages for loans that were sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and later defaulted. Now, this makes good headlines, but not a single individual responsible for this illegal behavior has even been indicted under Obama and the so-called Justice Department under Eric Holder. And we desperately need relief for the borrowers, for the homeowners. And even if the feds get $1 billion for Fannie and Freddie, it'll not keep a single family in a home that's underwater or facing foreclosure. And this is just so sad. Because, as I pointed out in crediting the news hour on PBS, this whole housing crisis is not on the radar for this year's election, either at the presidential level or below. Today, we posted a new Boiling Frogs Post conversation. Sibel Edmonds has returned. And we talked with Eric Dreitzer, who is a brilliant guy, and you'll hear him give us a detailed explanation of the austerity programs that have been forced onto governments in Greece, in Portugal, in Spain, and to some extent in Italy, and the real damage to real people that these moves are causing. And he makes a good case that we're next. And certainly, the Paul Ryan plan to privatize Medicare, turn it into a voucher program, the attacks on Social Security, the lame duck session that approaches right after the election, where something's going to happen that's going to be bad for the average American. Either there will be major cuts in domestic spending to stave off the promised $500 billion over 10 years to be cut from the defense program, or we're going to see more moves to, for example, extend the Bush tax cuts and put off a day of reckoning. And Eric Dreitzer, this weekend, October 27th, Saturday, has organized a conference under the name United Front Against Austerity. And I want to give you the details. I don't know how many listeners I have in New York City or nearby, but if you are, I hope that you will attend. It's at 56 Walker Street in New York. If you're mapping it, the zip code is 10013. It's just off Broadway, two blocks below Canal Street. Again, 56 Walker Street. And it's noon to 6 this Saturday in New York. And finally, the rogue utility that so far is keeping the lights on here at PBC World HQ is called Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E. And they're responsible for the pipeline disaster in San Bruno, which is near the San Francisco airport, just south of the city, that occurred in September of 2010. It killed 8 people, destroyed 38 homes, and damaged others. And PG&E has clearly and admittedly violated state and federal laws about the required inspection of these gas pipelines. They gave bonuses to executives for not inspecting pipelines. They couldn't find the blueprints, the plans to identify where some of these pipelines are and when they were last inspected. And this is not just sloppy behavior. It is, in my view, criminal negligence. And that's why I call them a rogue utility. So, without consulting those who were involved, those who were injured or survivors of those who died, those who had property damage, the people who represent them, including Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who was recently on our program, and even the full membership of the State Political Utilities Commission, they designated former Senator George Mitchell as an arbitrator or mediator, and he was supposed to establish how much PG&E will be fined for its deadly behavior. And now the consumer advocate group TURN, the Utility Reform Network, and the Utilities Commission's independent consumer watchdog have joined Congresswoman Speier and local elected officials in demanding that Senator Mitchell step down. because his independence cannot be assured. He was handpicked by Michael Peavy, who inexplicably Jerry Brown continues to keep as the chair of the State Public Utilities Commission, who designated himself as the point person for the investigation and fining of PG&E. And then he essentially, single-handedly, appointed George Mitchell as the mediator. And Mitchell has a good track record in professional baseball, in the Middle East, in Northern Ireland. But it really stinks the way he and his law firm, which is a mega corporate law firm called DLA Piper, were selected as the mediator in this case. And just as Henry Kissinger should never have been nominated to run the 9/11 Commission, which nonetheless performed as a whitewash, Senator George Mitchell should step down and say that this was a badly bungled process that will not produce confidence or an outcome with any integrity. Thank you for joining me today for News and Comment. Send your friends to peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.